Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and today my guest is Duncan Skiles, who is the co-writer and director of a new thriller out from IFC Midnight called The Clove Hitch Killer. Welcome, Duncan.
Thank you.
Now, this was a very intriguing movie. I love suspense. I love how it ramps up, but this one started off so slow. I was itching. And then when the first little clues started bugging our lead kid, Tyler, I was like, oh, okay, I see where this is going. This is going to just be one of those really, really slow burns. And the buildup and payoff was rather, I'm going to say, confusing and satisfying at the same time. So where you you co-wrote this, where did this idea come from?
Yes, I'm not officially credited as a co-writer, and the screenwriter, Christopher Ford, is a longtime collaborator of mine, and he did a great job with the script. And I had the idea around 2010, after researching a bunch of stuff about serial killers. I was just so interested in it, I thought that I should tell a story about this, but I don't like serial killers themselves as main characters. I wanted an entry point that was relatable and normal, and so I thought, what if we took it from the perspective of a family member finding this out before anyone else? And I started developing that in my head, and I told it to Chris Ford, and he was into it. And eventually, when the stars aligned, he took it on and wrote it.
Cool. So how long was it from, like, writing it to actually going into production?
Well, I think we first wrote the treatment in 2014, and before that, I had a rough outline. I had the story pretty well mapped out in my head and on index cards before 2014. And then we did the treatment and the screenplay that year, and then we shot in 2016. So it was a good two and a half years from page to screen.
What was the inspiration to make Tyler's investigation so, I'm going to say, positive, negative, because he wants to believe, but he doesn't want to believe, and he wants to believe, and he doesn't want to believe, and that lends sort of an extra added tension to what he and his friend Cassie are investigating.
Well, I was more interested in what was going on in Tyler than I was in playing with the question of who is the serial killer. That I thought, if it's obvious to someone near the beginning of the movie who the killer is, then I still wanted the movie to work, and that was kind of my experiment, because it was really more about what would you do in that situation. And I'm also really interested in that idea of something that we all do, which is we believe things that we want to believe in spite of available evidence. And I think that's a very strong force within all of us. And so I wanted to explore that within Tyler.
Yeah, the way you danced around his trying to give the benefit of the doubt despite the, you know, small mountain of evidence that is yelling and screaming at him, no, your first instincts were right. Don't push yourself. He's literally twisting himself into a pretzel to make up a reason why this can't be possible. And you just want to strangle him, but you understand his conflict. And you're like, you're being gaslit, son. You're being gaslit. Don't you see?
Yeah.
And it's a very satisfying conundrum, because you've put the viewer in the position of seeing the obvious and making the intuitive leaps. And you're watching your protagonist go, nope, Nope. And it's a very compelling hook to keep your audience watching.
Good, I'm glad. I don't think it works for everyone, but when it works, people are into it.
So what was something that you found satisfying about actually filming this, like directing this, actually getting this made?
Well, it was very surreal to do after being in my head for so long and talking about it and pitching it and moving from trying to get it made into executing, maybe very nervous. And the first couple days were kind of rough, as they can be on feature films. I was working with a lot of people I hadn't worked with before, but it evolved to be the most creatively fulfilling experience of my life, working with the cinematographer, Luke McCoubry, and the production designer, Leticia Duarte, the assistant director, Sienna Brown, and then Cody Ryder, the producer who I'd worked with before. She's so great in keeping this all together. And it was just very challenging and oftentimes very nerve-wracking, but just so engaging creatively, you know, because we had limited budget, limited time, and there was a lot of problem solving in the moment. And I just love, that's my favorite thing to do, is to be on location, working with a team of people that I really trust, and figuring out problems in the moment. It's kind of like managed chaos. And then also having the opportunity to work with a cast of that caliber was such an honor. They were so good that oftentimes I would just be able to sit back and enjoy the performance.
Yeah, you've got some established, it's just extremely experienced cast members, especially with Dylan McDermott and Samantha Mathis. I mean, they had to have helped just from an experience point of view. Did you find yourself listening to them or taking any suggestions from them?
For sure. I mean, they've got a lot more experience in the biz than I do, and they both came with a lot of great ideas, but they were also really willing to try out adjustments from me most of the time. I mean, Dylan was in character the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And we had to call him Don, so he was kind of like in his own world. And so I had to be very precise with my direction. And there were just a few times, I guess, with both of them where I wanted to try them something different. But I find that the best route there is to let them do their thing and then just say, let's try an alternate, you know, and then not do too many takes. But I'm super glad that, you know, they brought their experience and their wisdom to the project.
Nice. So what about the creative process for this? Because this isn't technically a horror. It's more just a thriller. Mm-hmm. But there are some slightly horrific aspects to some of the stuff that our killer has done. What about planting those seeds, about sort of building that undercurrent of dread, did you plan and enjoy, like, just dropping those little things in there?
Well, what was something that made you feel like there was an undercurrent of dread?
Every time I saw Don with his wife, I actually wondered, I'm like, does she know? Is she in on this? Because there are some times where you see that she's just cheerful and clueless, but there's a couple of scenes in there where she has this sort of questioning look on her face. And you're like, does she know? Is she part of this? Is this going to be something that, you know, totally blindsides Tyler? What's going on here?
Right. Yeah, that was something that was interesting to play with. There's a scene with the two of them in bed together, and where she says, maybe I shouldn't go to mom's, you know, and it kind of implies. And then near the end, I don't want to spoil anything, but she says something else about, you know, maybe having some awareness of his issues, you know. So I wanted to leave that somewhat ambiguous. I have a theory as to how it all went down between them. And that was certainly something that we went back and forth on when we were writing. And a lot of good stuff from Samantha got cut for story and pacing, like for mistakes that I made when I was shooting it. She had a little bit larger role, especially in the first half. I think that just the premise itself goes a long way towards creating that feeling of dread, because maybe that's one advantage of kind of making it, I guess, putting your cards out there from the beginning. It's like the idea that Hitchcock talked about. If you got two characters sitting across from each other talking, you know, normal scene. But then if you cut to a bomb ticking underneath the table, then it becomes very suspenseful, mm-hmm. just by what information you reveal. So, like, if it's kind of clear who Dawn is from the beginning, you know, I still think that that's very tense, because then you're in the house with a serial killer. So just that sort of, like, balance that Dylan did so well between dorky dad and sort of menacing presence. His little moments of sort of control, I think, added to that as well. He gets into a wrestling match with Tyler early on, and it's playful father-son, but I had this idea that he takes it, like, a little bit too far. Like, he has to win. He's not going to let go until Tyler concedes, and that was just another sort of element that I thought was adding to the creepiness.
Yeah, I think there was a line in there. It's like, you may be getting taller than me, but you can't beat me yet. I was like, oh, that's not a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. But I can still kick your butt. Yeah.
Yes, that one. So having had this constructive, creative experience making a suspenseful thriller, is that something you're looking forward to doing again?
Yes, absolutely. I have a lot of experience in comedy, but some of my early shorts are pretty scary, and I've always I felt like I've been good at it, and I'd like to do more of it. The thing, though, is, like, I'm not super comfortable with darkness and violence, just because it's something that you gotta, you know, kind of live with for several years, and I've seen this movie so many times now. And I just feel like it's so heavy and intense, you know? And so I want to do another suspenseful story, but I have an idea, and I have to find, like, the emotional center of it the way that I did with this one, so that I can sort of justify to myself why I'm making it.
Well, a suspense with comedic elements can always be a fresh change, because those two aren't usually combined. And when they're done mm-hmm. well, it's very, very entertaining, even if the humor is dark or if the humor is light and slapstick almost. It counterbalances that thriller, that suspense edge, and keeps your audience guessing. So good luck with that. I hope we get to see that in the next few years, depending on how long it takes you to get it made.
Yeah, a few years is the goal. I think a movie every 3 years or so would be ideal. Thank you.
Cool. Duncan Skiles, our director of Clovehitch Killer, which is out now on VOD and digital. Thank you so much for your time today and for such an unusually entertaining film.
Thank you for having me, Summer. I've enjoyed the talk.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Welcome to Tales of the Black Badge, a Wynonna Earp fan podcast. WynonnaEarpPodcast.com. Thanks again for checking in, and I hope you all take care.
told that devil to take you back.
Tales of the Black Badge, presented by Tuning Into Sci-Fi TV.
This is Stephen Kilpatrick, host of Tales to Terrify, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
And I like talking about these little indie horror, sci-fi, thriller, suspense films that seem to come out of nowhere. Clove Hitch Killer is one I'd recommend checking out if you have the time. I believe it's on VOD and on demand now. It came out in mid-November, I believe, so it's definitely out now. We're waiting for the rest of the winter television season to come up. Night Flyers, George R. R. Martin's Night Flyers debuts on Sci-Fi Channel this weekend. We have December 21st or 22nd, Runaways Season 2 on Hulu. Deadly Class doesn't start till January, but that's another Sci-Fi Channel Marvel adaptation this time, and I'm looking forward to all three of those, so we can chat about those later. We have the contests results. Actually, I have those later today, this weekend. If you get an email from me, you're a winner. If not, we'll try with the next batch. But starting, I think, Saturday night, you should get, or should be able to view on the website, a contest. We're going to try this one more time, see if the listening audience can get a fair chance at a really nice, nice prize. Courtesy of Warner Brothers, we have a copy of Westworld Season 2, The Door, a 4K Ultra HD version. So it's got the 4K version, the Blu-ray version, and the digital version all in this one box set. It includes all of the special bonus features that were available on the online digital version, plus a couple other featurettes. And my hope is that one of my faithful longtime listeners, or a new listener, will be the new owner of that and not one of the, shall we say, contest lurkers that are out there, the professional internet contest participants. Yeah, that's not going to fly here anymore. But what you can do is go to the website, follow the link from Twitter for that. You can enter via the Rafflecopter widget. All you need to do is select that, leave a comment answering the question that I ask in the Rafflecopter widget. And now through, I'm going to say, Sunday, December 9th, you will be able to enter that contest. The set itself comes out on December 4th, so if you don't win a copy, you'll be able to get your own copy on the 4th. If you have any, I guess, comments or questions or suggestions for other stuff to cover, or recommendations for interviews, please call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and TuneIn. And you can also leave a review for the show on iTunes or Stitcher. Please let people know that you are enjoying this program and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter @SliceofSciFi. You can also check us out on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. There's a lot of bonus content on the YouTube channel these days. We're collaborating on some extra content from Nerd Soul. He was our representative at Shriekfest LA back in October, and he did a fantastic job presenting the Slice of Sci-Fi sponsored award that evening, and he had a bunch of fun talking to some of the other guests featured at Shriekfest, and those videos you can find on our YouTube channel. And of course, there is the website, sliceofscifi.com, where you can leave a comment on any of these shows, any of the interviews, any of the reviews that we have done. Join in, have fun. Let us know that what we're doing is still part of your weekly geekly routine. I'd like to thank everyone who is supporting the program. The website, the media, all the shows through patreon.com. If you want to add your own support, you can check in at patreon.com/sliceofscifi. We do have perks. We have giveaways. We have perks over there. Right now, people who are eligible for receiving the December perks, keep an eye out on your emails. You will be notified soonish. And, of course, I'd like to throw a shout-out to my good friends, the geek rock band Sci-Fried, for their musical contribution to this show. If you want to check out some other music that they have done, both original and parody, go to their website, sci-fried.com. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.